Nice to see you again, and nice to be back at CIMC again, sort of. And when you see Larry again, please tell him that I said hello. Welcome to all of you. Very nice to be with you this evening. I was joking around. Most of you are at the meditation. I was joking around at the beginning that those who show up to spend time on Zoom when it's warm and sunny are getting extra points for the path to Nibbana. It's easy to be on Zoom, and it's easier when it's rainy or cold, or we're all putting in a lot of effort to continue to sustain our practice and our sanghas and our sense of connection to one another at this time. So very grateful that I have the opportunity to be with you and to practice tonight and to think a little bit about, reflect on, talk about the Dharma a little bit, and also hopefully to hear from some of you. Maybe there will be some questions at the end or an opportunity to hear about your own experience as you reflect on some of the ideas that I'd like to share. I guess firstly, and this is just a little bit different than what I just shared, but to come together to reflect on the Dharma and how it relates to our lives individually and collectively is to participate in and to help sustain a tradition that has lasted for a very long time, probably over 2,600 years. We're very fortunate, I think, that we can still gather together despite recent limitations, many limitations. We're very fortunate that we can use technology in a wholesome and beneficial way during this difficult time. Bear with me while I just create for myself a better visual of the group, those of you who have your cameras on. Okay. Throughout the course of the pandemic, I have witnessed how it has been hard for some people to sustain their meditation practice. And that's not a judgment. That's not a criticism. I have witnessed also how other people have redefined what practice means and looks like, and how those who have allowed their practice to change and be redefined have been able to see ever subtle aspects of the Dharma, turning a difficult time into a period of real, sincere self-exploration and sometimes insight. Earlier this week, while I was thinking about the early life of the Buddha, I recalled how the Dharma originated from and evolved out of, perhaps was a response to, a time of real pain and hardship for the young Siddhartha Gautama. I am a bit surprised that that didn't dawn on me during the past year, that it took until this week to make that connection. And I'm still sitting with that fresh reminder, that recollection or understanding, and yet it immediately struck me as helpful. Maybe even comforting. Typically, it's the norm for me to express my well wishes at the start of a drop-in class, such as the one that we're participating in together tonight. Any program, really, it's the norm for me to express my well wishes. Simply to say, I hope that you are well. I hope that everybody in the group is well tonight. I hope that you had a good day. I hope that you're having a good evening. And this sentiment remains true today, certainly. Maybe even more so than ever over the past couple of months. I hope that you are all well. To wish someone well is an act of optimism, particularly when things are difficult. On some days, benevolent well wishes seem to make more sense than anything else. When our well wishes are sincere, it is connective. I might even say restorative. It seems to me to have the ability to send a message to the receiver, as well as to the giver, that there is an underlying reasonableness to our world and an underlying reasonableness to our relationships. I don't know about you, but personally, the crazier the world appears to be, the more sense it makes to keep advocating on behalf of each other's well-being. These days, there's a little bit of a change for me. When I sit in front of a group, I seem to be, I think, a little bit more cautious, or maybe a little bit more concerned, maybe self-conscious. I seem to be a little bit more cautious about or around the many factors that might contribute to someone not being well, who's in the room. The past year has been a Dharma field comprised of many intimate encounters with realities of a human life highlighted in the Buddhist tradition. Ones that we might not always try to be connecting with. Groundlessness, uncertainty, pain, distress, unsatisfactoriness, samsara, impermanence, and so much more. Of course, these are universal, and they are also long-standing. And for those of us who have been coming around the Dharma for some time, these are not new concepts. They have always been right before us. But we get pretty good at hiding from the truth. We get pretty good at hiding from the truth. A learned habit, the Dharma tells us, a defense in more conventional terms or modern language. There are times in life, however, when our defenses and our modes of repression and avoidance are thwarted by more powerful forces and conditions. and we are abruptly awakened to the truth. COVID, I think, and living through a pandemic has sometimes been like this for some of us, which is to say a force stronger than our delusion, a presence in our life that asks us to reconsider so many things, including how we want to relate to and utilize the Dharma for our own benefit and for the benefit of others. That might even be something we can reflect on as a group later. How has your practice changed over the past year? Perhaps at the same time that COVID has brought hardships to my own life, perhaps it has also pulled me out of certain delusions. I would say that more affirmatively. It has at times pulled me out of some of my own delusions, made some things more clear. And I have seen this to be true for many students who I have known for a very long time, and also for some folks who I've had the opportunity to get to know much more recently. This seems obvious, but relevant to where I'm going in this conversation. Living in a pandemic has been and is difficult. And living during a pandemic has prompted most or all of us to ask certain questions. It has helped us, perhaps, make sense of certain aspects of our lives, even while it has caused confusion with regard to other aspects of our lives. For myself, part of what has been hard or confusing seems to have something to do with how it can be difficult to get used to the way things are. Some of the language we hear amongst friend groups and within the media and within our workplaces revolve around the new normal, right? However, it still sometimes feels and often feels like an ongoing abnormal. But from the perspective of the Dharma, it just is the way it is, isn't it? Normal and abnormal reflect what we are used to, our preferences, and our notions of how we think things should be or could be. Alternatively, the Dharma tends to have a way of pointing out what is. There isn't necessarily normal and abnormal, but rather there is only the way things are. There is only one way from a certain perspective. And that way is represented by whatever is arising or occurring in the moment. In the next moment, there is another way, another set of conditions or circumstances, so on and so on and so on. We can see in this idea how direct the Dharma can be, and also how simple When we are seeing clearly, we see the nature, we see the true nature of things, and we also see our preferences unfolding in real time, moment to moment. This is when our practice is going well. And when we are practicing according to the Dharma, we are not imposing those preferences on our surroundings, not on our relationships, not on the myriad of mundane experiences throughout the day, and not on the changing circumstances of the world. As our practice matures, even though we want things to be different in the long run, in the short term, in the moment, we let things be as they are, in the moment. Even if this is not always possible, we aim to do this so that we are less distressed ourselves. We do this to counter reactivity and give the mind space to respond appropriately, skillfully, with wisdom and with kindness. We do this so that we are more free. I think it's fair to say that when we see clearly, we make better choices and we are also happier. This is true even when life is difficult. It is also accurate to say, I think, that even when life is difficult, if we meet it with full attention, rather than dismissing and repressing and avoiding, sweeping our more unpleasant thoughts and feelings and emotions under the rug, we fare better in life. What we learn is that letting life touch us, being aware of what is unpleasant, being aware of the truth, is better than a life of distraction and false narratives. Better than endlessly chasing the pleasant. Fundamentally, being awake is inherently a more contented way of being in the world. Even in the absence of external threats, pains, challenges, problems being alleviated. Sitting at my desk in the mornings recently, with a fair degree of my own distractions, finding it as time goes on, finding it harder to do some of my work. But nonetheless, sitting at my desk in the mornings and reflecting on this evening's talk, I found myself returning to a single question. What does the Dharma offer during difficult times? Particularly, what has it offered during the pandemic? What can it offer going forward as we continue to live with COVID? My initial attempt to answer that question for myself found me coming up with very predictable answers. Answers that I recognized as jumping to ideals. And also what felt like conventional responses. Opportunities to practice kindness or patience, opportunities to bring more wisdom into our interactions. Or, for example, one popular early COVID response: we have more time to meditate even though we cannot go to the Dharma Center or on a group retreat. These responses, while having their place, I do think they have their place, didn't feel right. They were true in a sense, but didn't represent my feelings or the feelings of many of the students that I have been meeting with week after week. While these responses might have represented the Dharma, they also felt bookish or forced. They represented the Dharma without somehow representing the world we are actually living in. We have probably all known people, including dedicated meditators, who have run out of patience during the past year. We may have experienced this ourselves. Confusion has at times overshadowed wisdom. And our minds, despite the external space created by stay-at-home mandates, an absence of travel, a reduced and sometimes nearly eliminated opportunity for social connection, our minds have often become contracted despite the spaciousness. News cycles remind us of the many ways kindness is overshadowed by variations of selfishness. Nonetheless, the Dharma offers us something during this time. Glimpses of reality informed by honest observations of our own lives. Isn't this, after all, the heart of meditation practice and meditative awareness? The function of the Dharma is to hold up a mirror to reality. This is both liberating and at times very uncomfortable. The function of the Dharma is to hold up a mirror to reality. One of the ways the Buddha did this was to point out what he called samsara. We being the bulk of modern day practitioners, including teachers, we tend to think of samsara as a place where our distress is noticeable, if not acute. Samsara is sometimes represented as the very life we live most of the time. I think from a certain perspective, this is true. This is accurate, we could say. You might have even heard someone say over the past year that this pandemic is samsara. It is true, I think, that samsara represents or is the life we live much of the time, but there is a distinction we need to make when we talk about our life like this, when we talk about the Dharma, when we talk about samsara. Samsara is not so much here, if you will. samsara is not this room you are in that is too hot or too cold. Samsara is not your relationship or your marriage or your absence of a relationship or a romantic partnership. It's not your dirty house or the piles of laundry. It's not the dishes in the sink. It's not even your chronic illness. Samsara is not the pandemic. It's not COVID. Samsara isn't the job you dislike or having to deal with the boss that you find hostile or uncaring. The important point is this. Samsara is not a thing or a place marked by the conventions of time and space. I think early Buddhism's usage of samsara presents it less as a noun and more as a verb. A verb, of course, describing an action or an occurrence, we could say. So it's not that we are in samsara, but rather that we are samsara-ing. We are doing something. In the experience is what we call samsara. This is interesting, I think, if not perhaps a little bit provocative, I imagine, particularly at a time where so many of us are inclined to think that our suffering throughout the pandemic has been imposed upon us by something else. A common view is that we have found ourselves deeper in samsara because of COVID. Because there is, in certain places, at certain times, a legitimate risk to our health and our safety. Because we cannot go to work. Because our finances, and for some people, basic security and shelter, are at risk. And then there are the real pains associated with the sickness of loss of loved ones and friends, or our own overwhelm at the global death rates associated with such a horrible virus. These are the very real pains of our life right now, not to be disregarded or even taken lightly. They are certainly our shared reality. And they do contribute to the proliferation of samsara. Though they are not the thing itself, they are not samsara. The Buddha never said these things wouldn't happen. He didn't lay out a path that aimed to avoid unexpected or even unpleasant things, or make them go away even. What he did do was to say that on top of these pains, there is dukkha, the distress that arises in our mind and body as a response to these many variations of pain that comprise a human life. Dukkha, the result of our response to life, is inseparable from samsara, which translates literally as something closer to wandering on or moving about from here to there, through meditation practice, we come to understand that we are almost always wandering on, moving about from here to there. True presence is very slippery. Though as we cultivate the skills of concentration and mindfulness, we wander on much less. As we get better at resting our attention on what is arising in the present moment, our thoughts, our feelings, sensations, we temporarily disrupt the habit of moving about from here to there. We stop making up stories and identities, imagined realities, imagined alternatives to what we are experiencing right now. Instead, we just experience what is happening. We stop samsara-ing. Even if only temporarily. We might have noticed our own tendency to wander on, get very strong throughout the pandemic, thinking about and talking about when the pandemic is over, when COVID goes away. We may even have noticed sometimes how these machinations and narratives sometimes postpone well-being and happiness until the future. Unimagined place and time, when something that represents hardship is gone, no longer here. But from a Dharma perspective, if the pandemic is not samsara, we don't necessarily have to wait for the pandemic to be over to be more free. We do, however, have to stop wandering on. We have to stop samsara-ing. Dukkha and samsara are a process. They are comprised of the ways we react to the circumstances of our life. We either grasp at another imagined reality, reject the reality we are experiencing, or cling to the reality we are experiencing. So we are never settled. We are never right here, you could say. Or rarely are we right here. The angst and stress and worry formed by this wandering on, made up of grasping and clinging, are dukkha. We should work to eradicate COVID, if that is possible. I also realize that, at least for myself personally, what I can do is limited to wearing my mask and behaving appropriately and carefully in social settings. I don't have the education or resources or scientific know-how to contribute beyond my own body, speech, and mind. But I do have the Dharma. We all have the Dharma. The work involved in eradicating a virus, like getting rid of an oppressive dictator, takes time and includes many collaborative efforts aimed at another future set of external conditions. But in the moment, to be free, the Dharma offers itself to us as a reminder to witness our own mind and body, simply to sit with ourselves, to sit with our experience, without wandering on, without pushing anything away, nor trying to make something else happen. We will benefit from curbing the tendency to wander on in our own mind, even while at the same time, we do what we can to make the world safer. The pandemic's lessons are considerable. The pandemic's unanswered questions are considerable. Many of those lessons and some of those questions are disappointing. They are hurtful, scary, sad, depressing, and/or anger-inducing. And the end result for some people in some families has been or will be truly compromising, to say the least. If and when we feel overwhelmed, that does not reflect on our limitations as a practitioner. Rather, it reflects on our humanity, our appropriate vulnerability. At the same time, some of the pandemic's lessons are themselves Dharma teachings. Uncertainty and impermanence are made obvious everywhere. Our mind and our response to life increases or decreases dukkha. Samsara is real. Our thoughts are subject to change, as well as our emotions. The only thing solid is reality itself, marked by these factors of change and not knowing. Throughout the pandemic, we have come to understand better how life's unfolding is predicted far more by a complex wide range of conditions than it is by our personal needs and desires. We don't get what we want, at least not all of the time, and sometimes not very often. If we have become suspicious of the idea that we cannot control our life, we are one step closer to wisdom. If we have become suspicious of the idea that we can control our life, we are one step closer to wisdom. We do not control life. We are subject to it. Reality cannot be bent. When we lose control or give up control, we say that we are groundless. And as a general rule, we do everything we can to avoid this experience of groundlessness. And yet this habit traps us, plunges us deeper into the cycle of samsara. Groundlessness, when we connect with it fully, threatens the self, the thing that aims to create and sustain a sense of place and identity within the world of moving experiences, phenomena coming and going. The self likes to position itself between this and that. The self is for this and against that. It has boundaries. It has forms that provide a semblance of familiarity and structure and safety. It entirely opposes groundlessness. But groundlessness is one of the most subtle and pervasive truths of a human life and of a practitioner's evolving understanding of the Dharma. Groundlessness, despite spending much of our waking time and energy avoiding it, reflects and represents the freedom of the Dharma, even while it remains counterintuitive throughout much of our practice. Living through a pandemic offers itself to us, if we allow it, as a shattering of our delusion. It is waking us up. It is the Dharma right before our eyes. What we learn through meditation practice is that we are consumed with trying to avoid the groundlessness of life. And what we miss out on as a result of this conditioning is experiences of real freedom. Our wandering on, the very act of samsaraing, is all an attempt to avoid this inherent and unavoidable groundlessness. In our attempts to avoid the groundlessness of our life, we construct a world of hopes and fears and unreachable narratives rather than living square in the middle of what is, the here and now, the pleasant and the unpleasant. When we are in touch with the groundlessness of our lives, there is nothing to gain or lose. This is a point worth reflecting on in our practice. Groundlessness renders us complete. Groundlessness renders us whole. The effort to go here or there, the habit of constantly forming alternative realities in our own mind, having subsided temporarily, takes with it the conceptual boundaries that leave us trapped in samsara. When this happens, the Dharma offers itself to us as real freedom. And with the insight revealed to us through these experiences as a foundation for our actions, we continue to do what is necessary to make the world a safer space. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your attention. Thank you for your practice. Nice to be with you tonight. Some names and some faces that I don't know and who I haven't met, and I hope to be able to see you and talk with you and practice with you again sometime in the future, and I wish you well, and thank you for having me tonight. Thank you, everybody. Take good care.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.